Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 37, and I am Libya, your host. And this week we have a brand new guest.
Hi, I'm David from Los Angeles, and I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller.
And it's Peter from Los Angeles.
Greg from St. Louis, Missouri.
Woohoo! St. Louis. All right, and this week we have actually a lot of news. First up, I have that there's a new show coming up called Breaking In, starring Christian Slater. And it's supposed to be a comedy version of the A-Team crosses Leverage, which I find to be a very bizarre combination. And Christian Slater, not a big fan, so I'm not quite sure how that's going to work out. The next show we have coming up is Showtime is doing a new show called Homeland, starring Claire Danes, and it's based on an Israeli show called Prisoners of War, which I think is the first time we've ever stolen something, a television show from the Israelis. So I'm kind of curious. I want to check that out. Next up is cancellations. Medium has been canceled after, what, 7 or 8 seasons or something like that, which is kind of weird because it was canceled on its original network and then it moved to a new network and then was immediately canceled. So, or no, it's not immediately. It was for a year or so. And then it got canceled. The only reason I'm reporting that is because Medium is technically sci-fi-ish, even though I've never seen an episode. The news that I don't like is that The Good Guys has been canceled. But, you know, I obviously saw that coming, and I think everybody saw that coming because the ratings were so low. But I hadn't heard any news, so I was kind of hopeful. But it officially has come down that Fox is not buying any new episodes. I love that show. But nobody, and I haven't talked about it in the podcast because nobody on the podcast is watching that show.
I knew it was going to be canceled, though, I think. I would have predicted that from the second episode or so.
Right. I mean, I could tell just from the ratings. The ratings were really bad. But, I mean, the sense of humor, I love it. I love the editing style. All that stuff's fantastic. But, anyway.
But Matt Nick's other show is still doing strong, going strong.
Oh, Burn Notice?
Yeah.
Yes. And then the other bit of news is that for those who are computer savvy, or actually just have a computer, can check out the new trailer for Spartacus, Gods of the Arena, which is the little prequel, 6-episode prequel, and it's apparently starting in January. And I've checked out the trailer, and it's pretty cool. I mean, it's Crixus, his first day in the at the House of Badiatis, being a gladiator, and you find out kind of his motivation behind wanting to be the champion of Capua. You know, like, all that is very cool. So I'm very excited. What'd you say, Greg?
I said cool.
Yeah, yeah. And the trailer's online, so you can go check that out if you want. The other trailer that's also up is Doctor Who's Christmas special. First news is that apparently it's going to air simultaneously to the British, so we get it the same day, Christmas Day, on BBC America. So yes, people don't have to resort to other measures to see it. The other bit of news about it is that apparently it is their take on Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol. So the Doctor, Rory, and... oh, Amy, I forgot her name, Amy, are going to be the ghosts of Christmas present past or whatever.
Very pretty.
Yes, and apparently Scrooge is the guy, Dumbledore, from the new Harry Potter movies is Scrooge. So I was like, cool. That trailer is online as well if you want to check it out. Anybody else got any other news?
Big Bang Theory, the character of Amy Farrah Fowler, played by Blossom's Maeyn, is it Bailick? I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce her name. She's been cast as a series regular now. I don't know if that means her name. We're going to be in the top credits, but she is now a full season, you know, she's a regular character.
All right.
Which is cool. And then the other thing, I was announced yesterday that because of American Idol, Fox is, you know, they're redoing their schedule for January, and Fringe has moved to Friday, which Firefly and Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles, that's not a good sign anytime you move to Friday, especially on Fox. So
well,
I don't know.
Friday is the door out of the network, as as shown by Good Guys, was originally on Monday, and they got moved to Friday, and now they're canceled.
So I mean, a part of me doesn't mind Fringe moving from Thursday, because honestly, Thursday is a really tough night to go for anything. I just don't. I wish it wasn't going to Friday. I can understand moving it from Thursday, because I do think there's no way they don't want Idol on Thursday. I understand that, but who knows? Or maybe it's only going to Friday for as long as American Idol's on. Maybe it'll go back afterwards.
Well,
you
think about it that in January there's not going to be Good Guys, so they need something to fill the Good Guys slot on Friday. So if you cancel a show, you got to move something to replace it. And
it's going to be in the same time slot as Supernatural. So for those who watch both, it's going to be dual tuner there.
Mm-hmm. That is going to suck for people who don't have dual tuners. Get a dual tuner, people. All right.
And I just have a bit. I was watching Stargate Universe this week. I don't know how many people caught it, but I guess there was a pilot for an American version of Being Human that's actually going to premiere on the Sci-Fi Channel in January 2011.
Yeah, you told me about it, and I just watched it, and I am not impressed.
Yeah, it's kind of disturbing. Not sure how it's going to work out.
It looks very much like the poor man's version of Being Human, which is pretty sad because the budget for Being Human's not that expensive. So it's because the guy playing George kind of looks a little nerdy, but the guy playing Mitchell, and they changed everyone's name for some unknown reason, because George and Mitchell are apparently too British, so they changed their names to something else. And I think the girl's name is the same. I don't know, but I'd rather just see third season of Being Human, which is coming soon, versus whatever the heck this is going to be. All right, let's kick it off. Let's start off with Walking Dead. We're going to be on the timer again. All right, ready, go.
I thought it was the best so far. I thought it was really good. I would say the third was the best one. The middle was okay, and I really liked the pilot. But yeah, that was a good episode. I'm curious to see. My prediction is that, I mean, basically, the big setup of the episode was that Rick and the gang decided to go back to downtown Atlanta to go get firearms that was left. I think he left it by the tank, right?
Right.
And then also to get the Michael Rooker character, who's the big racist evil, like, who was chained to like a post on a roof or whatever. What I'm thinking is, because he's Michael Rooker, when they get there, he's gone. He's ripped his hand off. He's cut his hand off with a hacksaw.
Yeah.
And he has a brother who is also seems like a real jerk. I have a feeling what's going to happen is, I think the brother, who seems like a no-name actor, I think he's going to get killed. But I think the Michael Rooker character, I don't know if, you know, they're going to meet him by accident or find him or whatever. But I'm wondering if Rooker's going to become more of, like, I just can't see him being only on, like, one episode. I feel like he'll be on probably throughout the rest of the season, because there's only three episodes left.
And maybe he'll get a hook for his hand. But
yes.
I actually slightly disagree. I still think the pilot is probably the strongest episode. This one was good, but it still felt like they're still setting up this universe. It still really feels like it was set up. And it's kind of weird because we're halfway through the season already and not a lot has really happened. I'm totally enjoying the show. I enjoy the characters. I like that they finally resolved what the heck is going on between the wife and the best friend, as far as for the audience to understand what happened and how they got into that relationship. So I like that they gave us that information. I like that he got reunited with his family, because I was afraid they were going to try to string that along for a while, and they didn't. So I was like, cool. But of course, what they're going to string along is Rick finding out that his wife slept with his best friend. But, you know, as far as no one got any minus points for me as far as being stupid during the zombie apocalypse, everybody was pretty smart. Except maybe the brother, because he gets a break because of emotional turmoil or whatever. But yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I'm really excited about the next new episode. And of course, for all of you that guessed, The second season is going to be 13 episodes, and it's not going to premiere till Halloween again. So we have a whole year before we get more Walking Dead.
Oh, that's a long time.
Yes. Anyway, anybody else got any thoughts?
I've only seen the first episode, and I'm not a zombie fan. I'm not a big zombie guy, so I'm biased. But I thought it was actually a good take on zombies. I thought it was, you know, a nice little fresh thing with on the zombie genre. And, you know, it's a little slow because you have to establish all those things about the right. world. And, you know, but I thought they did a good job. And you know, I don't know if I'll watch more of it, but, you know, for those of you zombie fans out there, I think it's something to keep an eye on. So.
Yeah, I have to say, I do like the zombie movies. I mean, just because I don't find them that particularly scary, I think they're fun. And it usually is a take on the human condition and how people react in that kind of situation.
Right.
And that's really what it's more about, and I find that interesting.
Right, the first episode where he sees his wife, that's, you know, that was very touching to me, very real in a moment for me. And, you know, dealing with what happens when your loved ones go away, essentially.
Right.
You know, what do you do?
Right. Well, Greg, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm really enjoying the show. I'm seeing a little some elements that are a little different from some of the other zombie films. I think the zombies are a little more animated in that I really didn't think, you know, as you see the zombies and they're kind of, you know, rigor mortis kind of moving, yet in some of the scenes they can climb stairs. And apparently they can climb ladders.
Yeah, I thought that they were okay. Once I got up that ladder, I was like, oh, they're going to be fine. But then you see one zombie kind of climbing a little bit behind them. Like, it's moving really slow up the ladder, but it does look like it's making its way up the ladder.
And also, yeah. they can
use skill senses.
They can use tools, too, because the one zombie, I think it was the last episode before, picks up a brick, and that's how they break through the store window.
Yeah, it thought to pick up a brick. That's a little more intellect than most zombies usually have. That's a good point.
They can use tools like orangutans, yes.
My thing I wanted to bring up there's a movie, I brought this up with Libby and I discussed this. There's this movie from like almost 10 years ago, and it's called The Fast Runner. It's basically based on, it takes place, I think it's in Alaska. It takes place in, it's kind of like a old Inuit kind of legend, or kind of, well, not a fairy tale, but kind of a legend. But basically the idea is that, like, when you're in these extreme situations, when there's only, like, you know, a small band of you, and you're just fighting to survive, be it zombies or the environment or whale, you know, whatever, you really have to go less with people being your personality types and more people that maybe have a value. And one of the things about the Michael Rooker character is that, even though, of course, I don't like that he's a big racist and everything, he does seem to be a pretty good sharpshooter. So I'm kind of like, well, he kind of has a value. In the last episode, there is a character that he just seems kind of like this layabout hick kind of husband.
Oh, the wife beater.
And he ends up being, he smacks his wife. And then, like, at the same time, Rick's best friend, who has slept with Rick's wife, you know, has just been told by the wife, you know, it's over, you know, my husband's back. So he basically takes his feelings out on this guy. You know, he really just beats this guy down who was, you know, being pretty abusive to his wife. I got to say, I know it sounds cold, but I was kind of like, I don't know why they just don't kill this guy. This guy has no value. Like, he's lazy. You know, he's not even doing the laundry. Like, I mean, he's not even doing, like, a menial task. It doesn't look like he's a sharpshooter, so I'm kind of like,
That he has a wife and a kid, so you can't just take the husband out and shoot him because you're like, you have no value.
They're better off without that guy, man. I don't like, but yeah, that's what I thought. I thought that was interesting to me that, like, you could have Michael Rooker in the episode before, who's horrible, terrible person, you know? But I'm kind of like, yes, he has a skill, you know, even though I don't like him, he has a skill. And then you have this guy that, you know, is also kind of a bad person, but because I don't think he has a value, I'm like, take him out, you know? So anyways, I just thought that was funny.
Yeah. We got to move on. We've overstepped our time on this one. So let's move on to Dexter. And this week's Dexter was a pretty big episode. This was the turning point for Dexter and Lumen. as far as their bizarre relationship that they have going on right now, that I really don't understand and can't really follow, and I don't get it. But apparently, like, Lumen is, Dexter's kind of seeing her as a younger version of himself, that he has to guide her and kind of be her Harry for her. And he's opened himself up to her more than I've seen him open up to anyone. I mean, even when he was with Jimmy Smith's character and it looked like the two of them were like best friends, but Jimmy Smith was crazy or whatever, he never really told Jimmy Smith everything. He told him a little bit. But with Lumen, he is literally bringing over the kid. She's living in his old house. She knows his whole name. She knows everything about him. She knows how he first started killing. Like, it's crazy, everything that he's telling her. And I'm like, how in the heck are they going to resolve this? Because Lumen, you can't not like her, because she kind of comes off as kind of an innocent. So it's not the same situation where you're like, oh, he's going to kill them by the end of the season. At the moment, I don't see him killing her. And there's this weird kind of strange attraction that they have going on that I don't think that Dexter's kind of, not that he's not aware of the attraction. I think Dexter's aware of the attraction. I'm not sure if she does. They have this like kind of weird codependence. But the big deal about this episode was, Deb's partner put a private investigator, who is the RoboCop guy that we had been complaining about for the last couple of weeks, put the RoboCop guy on Dexter's trail. And so he's been following Dexter, and he followed them to a murder spot, because they had already killed the guy, but he followed them to their boat. And so he's got pictures of Dexter and Lumen throwing garbage bags over the side of the boat. So that's bad, because there were very much body. There was a body in there. But I don't know. This guy's kind of a lazy private investigator. Like, I don't see him diving to find out what's in the bags. But he's definitely got pictures of Dexter and Lumen throwing these bags overboard. So I'm not quite sure where that's going. But that was, like, huge. Anyway,
And for a person who actually doesn't watch Dexter anymore, why would Dexter put the body parts in bags before he threw them over water? Because wouldn't it be better if the body parts actually decomposed faster?
Oh, you mean versus how would you suggest you dispose of the bodies?
Not in bags.
Like, if you put them without bags, they won't sink. They'll float, and people will find them. So he has to put them in something. And even if it's in bags, they're still going to decompose, because water's still going to get in the bags. So it's win-win. And he separates the parts, so it's hard to figure out who it is that he killed. That's the point. Okay.
Then I will assume that the bags are not watertight. Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Garbage bags are generally not completely watertight, especially if they're in the water for very long. That's just my opinion. All right. Moving on to House. Last week, we talked about the fact that they added...
Amber Tamblyn.
Thank you. I was blanking. I was remembering her other character. And we were saying that it was a really good addition to the show, and that she really works on this show. And this is the second episode with her. And I would say this episode worked really well too, because it was like a contrast between House's procedure of lying incessantly to everyone to try to get his way, and Amber Tamblyn's character, her name is Masters. Basically, her method is tell the truth, but still manipulate people into doing what you want. So that was kind of interesting to see the contrast between the characters. The case itself was, you know, okay. I think me and Peter disagree a little bit about the intro, which was the whole slave ship and let's watch them all get sick and get thrown overboard and then their ship get sunk. What'd you think, Peter?
Yeah, I thought House has this weird thing where, like, they have these openings that are sometimes very un-House-like. Which is cool. It's a cool idea, because you start to show, you know, in a different period on a slave ship, you're like, am I watching House? Like, that's totally fine. I like that idea. But I always feel like, I can only think of a few instances. This instance, and I remember there's one episode last season where I think it's about a cop. The cop's chasing some guy through a building. And I just remember thinking that it felt very much like, this is a TV show within a TV show. Like, we're going to cut, House is watching this on television. That's why it looks so kind of artificial. So, like, while the premise, which is that slave ship, smallpox, then, you know, this white, I don't know if suburban, but this white kind of well-to-do family on a boat, their daughter, now maybe she's got smallpox because she discovers a bottle and the bottle breaks. Like, that on paper is interesting. I just don't like their execution. I found, which is where you and I disagree, I just thought the slave ship, it just looked fake. Like, it just looked artificial or something.
Well, I thought it was interesting.
I wanted to say something, the same thing, that the last two episodes have started with the with those completely foreign intros, and I think it's interesting, and I actually, what you said about it being watching it on TV, that's exactly what they did last time, where they had the political opening, and then it showed it was an ad campaign on a television screen.
Totally, and like that, yes, you're right, that was good, I like that one.
And I think that was okay, but I think they're a little long. I think they just go on, and it's like, I know this is House, I know I turned the right to the right channel, but I want to see what the story develops into quicker.
Right, okay.
I would agree.
I can see that. What did you?
The biggest thing about the episode, though, is that because it is supposedly smallpox, it comes down to the episode. You know, it comes down to the CDC coming in their cool ET outfits, and they're all like protected. And of course, House is going to go in there and check on the patient without anything on. And because he's House, there's no danger. Because we're like, he's House. Clearly, he's going to be okay. Right. If you had sent, you know, Foreman in, I might be like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen. What if it's Chase? You know, but. I mean, it's House. Like, right. I don't know why the TV writers know that we know House is, you know, it's not like this is even the finale or anything. So I don't understand why they do those things.
Right, the predictability factor was awfully high in that show, so.
Yeah. They kill the dad, though. I wasn't sure they were going to do that. Yeah.
That's true. They did kill the dad, and it does seem like the dad has a son from a previous marriage, and now that son is stuck with the new mom and sister-in-law, right?
Right.
And obviously he looks pretty upset at the end, you know, like, so, and I was like, well, I feel bad for that kid, you know, his whole family is completely topsy-turvy now. And then there was another side plot where
Wilson
and his girlfriend have to help this cancer kid with a missing stuffed animal. And, you know, I really like Wilson, but yeah, it was all right.
I thought the kid was cute, but that's all I had.
Yeah, kid's cute, I agree.
I like Wilson's side plots, though. I think Wilson and his girlfriend slash ex-wife is an interesting twist, and I wish they'd get back to seeing how House reacts to it a little more.
Well, that's the thing, is Wilson and side plots are only interesting if as it relates to House. Yeah. If it's just House had no idea any of this was going on, so because of that, it was kind of boring.
So, I agree.
So, yeah, you have to have House's reaction to whatever you're doing, or else it's just not good.
True.
All right, moving on.
Oh, wait. I like the Amber Tamblyn. I mean, I like her. I like her in Joan Rickety a lot, and I'm glad to see her on another show that I like. And I think it is a good contrast. I think I'm wondering how they're going to, you know, corrupt her by House, or are they going to make House a little better because of her? You know, I think that dynamic, that conflict is going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
The fact that he doesn't push her. Well, he can't push her.
He's tried to push her, and she learned to push back. So yeah. they're on equal ground now, and it's relatively equal ground, and it's interesting to see that. And because she's such a weak character coming into it, she's not even a doctor, but she holds her own in this case.
Exactly. The next show we got to talk about is The Event.
And my question is, Libya, do you know what The Event is yet?
No.
I will ask that every week I am here. And until you tell me, yes, I know what The Event is, I don't know how interested I am.
But you say
it's good.
I think The Event was something.
Yeah, I think The Event might have already happened.
Yeah.
Oh, you think it's in the past?
I'm not sure yet, but it's possible.
Offhand, my guess is The Event is how the group came to be.
I don't think that that's it, because I thought that too, but they kept saying that The Event, well, actually, it can't be in the past, because they keep talking about it's going to happen, and we have to warn them about it.
Hmm.
So, okay.
Well, that makes me think it's the future.
Right.
Yeah.
So, it can't be them landing. I'm going to go with the future. But this week's episode, I have to say, Ben, I really like all the stuff dealing with the president and dealing with the aliens and dealing with all that. That stuff is really good. But, man, the Jason Ritter stuff, I literally fast-forwarded I seriously, like, I saw what his situation was. Like, they basically, he gets shot because he's, because they're running away from getting captured, and they're not paying attention. And the girlfriend was annoying because she kept, like, they're 5 feet away from a death squad that came after them, right? The death squad gets mostly blown up. She has this big breakdown and is crying in the street, and he has to calm her down. And in the process of calming her down, he gets shot. I was like, she's useless. He should have let her die.
Yeah, I have a hard time with Jason Ritter. I mean, I like him as an actor. In the roles that I've seen him in, he was a great love interest in was it Gilmore Girls, or I don't remember what
he
it
was. He was in Joan of Arcadia. He was the
brother. Yeah, Joan of Arcadia.
The brother, but no, something more. Something more recently, maybe it was Parenthood. Parenthood, that's what he was on.
Oh, okay.
And with Lauren Graham from Gilmore Girls.
Well, that's why you're confused. Okay.
But, yeah, that's right. Yeah, the teacher.
Yeah, the teacher. But anyway, I like him, and I like him in some roles a lot. This role, I cannot see him, and I cannot get into believing him as this
action
super
guy.
Action guy, hacker hero, you know, whatever. It's not working for me, and I want him to change, but I don't know that it's going to happen for
me. The problem is, knowing that when we're watching what the president is doing, what the aliens are doing, it has global impact. It's very important. And then you go to what he's doing, and it's not important. I mean, he's uncovering slowly the information that everyone else already has. So I'm kind of like, well, how is that interesting? We already know what he's trying to uncover piece by piece, so that's not interesting at all. And his girlfriend, they at first showed her to be kind of strong and brave, and now that he's there, now all of a sudden she's weak and crying. I don't care. But in the way that I watch the episode, which is, I find out what's going on with Jason Ritter's character, and then I start fast-forwarding. Episode's fantastic, because then I see all the stuff that's going on with the president, the vice president. This week's episode was really good, because it revealed that the vice president was in on the assassination attempt, which was why, when I was watching the pilot, it's like, he's about to give his speech, and he can't find his vice president. His vice president's gone. And I was like, psh, he's the one who did it, you know? It was two people that were gone. And so I knew it was one of those two people. But this week they reveal it, and you find out that he's actually kind of a good guy. But the main big thing you find out is apparently the blood or some element from the aliens can make you younger, sort of. Because you see the guy keep using this stuff in his tea, the old man. He keeps putting these drops in his tea, and at the very end you see him looking at the mirror.
Right.
And he's young for like 5 seconds, and then he's back to being old. So obviously his whole interest for keeping the aliens locked up is he wants to keep doing experiments on them so he can find out like that whole key to being younger or whatever, which, I mean, that's a better motive than some crazy political scheme, because you don't know why this guy's doing everything that he's doing. Now that you know that it's self-interest, I'm like, okay, that's more interesting. Anyway, all right, watch the event. I still think it's pretty good. It has a couple problems, but I still like it. And it's got picked up for the whole season, so there's that.
Sorry, still got a bad taste in my mouth from Flash Forward.
Yeah. I keep thinking it's like, you know, some sort of time travel Flash Forward-y thing, but I'm waiting to hear more. I just don't know what it is yet.
We'll find out. I'm still liking it. All right, next up is Castle. What'd you guys think? This week's episode was the aliens UFO probing thing.
Oh, yeah, that was the play on the X-Files, where they got in the car and got stopped by the EMP, and the light came down upon them,
right.
And they were, you know.
And then they got knocked out and everything, right. and then they got interviewed versus
right.
probed, I suppose. Though I think the best line was still, dye your hair red and call you Scully.
Yeah.
I thought that was really pretty good.
Well, no, I thought the best line was when she was deciding whether or not to put the DVD in the computer, and she goes, "Well, let's just stick it in and get it over with already."
and did you see his look?
Yeah, the look on his face was great. They're very good with the innuendo. I have to give them points for that.
Yeah.
But it was good interaction, Beckett. And then. He actually almost had her convinced that it was aliens. He was like, come on, say it, we're their witnesses. But then it ended up being, what is it? It was a vacuum pack in some warehouse. What was the actual thing? I forgot what it actually was.
It was a satellite.
Oh, it was Spies. That's what it was.
Yeah,
it was, Spies. Yeah, the person who I actually... Because now, you know, you watch the episode and you're like, the first person that you meet that looks suspicious is actually the one that did the killing.
Especially if it's a known character actor.
Right. This one actually wasn't a known character. It was the assistant. And I remember when they introduced her at the beginning and she's like, oh, this is her office. All her right. stuff is gone, blah, blah, blah. I was like, she did it. And I was right, actually. Though they threw me off with the whole... aliens and UFO thing, but at the end of the day, it was still the first person you suspect.
Yeah, I like any show that gives Lyle Lovett a guest star, because I just like to see him. He's not the best actor in the world.
No, not at all.
but he's fun to watch. I don't know. I find it interesting. So
well, he was so over the top stoic yeah. that I was like, "Are you reading your lines right now, like off a piece of paper?" so he was. He was funny, but and it was funny to casting. I agree, yeah. But wow, he needs to practice a little more. but you know, the storyline was pretty simple, but I did like the fun that they put into it. There was nothing at home going on at home, I think, this week, but you know, that's fine. I don't need any home life for Castle. All right, good episode. Any other comments? If not, we are moving on to Glee. This week,
Gwyneth Paltrow rules.
I have no opinion, yes or yay or nay on Gwyneth Paltrow.
You thought she was good.
Yeah, I know, but you were saying that every female that you asked hated her.
Julia hates her. My friend Lisa's gonna dance on her grave when she dies. Like, yeah, I mean, I don't really get it. I don't get the hate of. For Gwyneth Paltrow.
Like I said, I'm neutral. I have no opinion one way or the other. However, in this episode of Glee, I thought she was fantastic. I thought this was a really good episode. It was one of the stronger ones. The only weak spot I felt was that random comedy.
The Singing in the Rain thing?
Well, it's not the Singing in the Rain at the end, but it was from Singing in the Rain, where it's this comedy skit, Make 'em Laugh, which I love Singing in the Rain. But the problem was that piece did not fit in that episode. It was kind of
weird, but we did get to see. I do think the student. I think he's a really good dancer. But I agree, it didn't really fit. But I like watching him dance. If that makes sense.
Yes, but I felt like that was the only reason why they did it, which to me is like bad storytelling. But other than that, I thought that every other song that they did in the episode and every other plot point that happened. Made sense and worked. And Gwyneth Paltrow can sing. I didn't know she could sing.
Well, she was just in a country... She's just in a film, I think some kind of country film, where she's singing. And so a couple weeks ago, she was on the Country Music Awards, and that was the big thing, was that Gwyneth Paltrow was going to sing. And that's why I recorded it, because I don't usually record the Country Music Awards. And I was like, well, I'm kind of curious. And I thought she was good. I will admit that... Julia doesn't really like Gwyneth Paltrow, but I would admit that I actually thought... The last song of Glee, which was the song from Chicago, Rachel and Gwyneth, while I thought the song was fine, I don't really think they were very strong dancers. I've never thought Rachel was a really, like, especially compared to, like, Britney. I think Britney's way better.
Well, I don't require them necessarily to be strong dancers. I'm fine with that. I'm impressed when they are, but that doesn't, the show is more about them singing. So
Sure. Yeah. I'm not saying it destroyed. I still like the episode, too. Yeah. I mean, right. Definitely.
And I think that Schuster's whole sleeping with his wife, good Lord, that man sleeps with everyone. What is the deal? Because he sleeps with his ex-wife, and then he's macking on Gwyneth Paltrow. And I was like, really? Come on.
Although, like, I remember Julia told me that she did not miss the wife character at all. Well, they're bringing this character back.
I didn't miss her at all either. She's like, this is the last chance you have to get me back, or I'm really leaving. And I was like, don't let the door hit you in the butt. So
Julia just said she bets she's pregnant because they did sleep together.
Oh, man.
That'd be terrible if they do that.
No, please don't do that. Pretty please. Oh, my God. No, don't do this.
They did get together, though.
Yeah, it is kind of a soap opera, and there was no other reason to do it.
And she had the big, you're making a big mistake. You're going to, it was very much this threat. So maybe. I hope that's not what they do.
Oh, also, Kurt and Mercedes had a good storyline going on with, you know, we introduced to Kurt's boyfriend now, who he claims isn't his boyfriend, but it did really seem like he was. And then the tater tots battle with
Sue.
I was trying to forget. I just totally blank on names sometimes. Yeah, so that whole battle, that was all entertaining, and they had like a rebellion, and then they all showed up at some restaurant because that's the only place that sells tater tots. But I really did feel that Mercedes was a little, you know, she was a little bit jealous of Kurt's new relationship because he, you know, he's not spending time with her and everything. So all that was really good. I liked that character bit, but yeah, they are totally making Schuster unlikable. Oh, I did like the scene where everyone was kids. Like the whole class got turned into little children.
Yeah, I thought that was a little too broad for me. I didn't care for that.
I thought it was cute. I liked it.
No.
Because then I was trying to figure out which kid was supposed to be which one of them. So I thought that was all good. I don't know. I liked it.
Does no one else watch Glee but us?
Apparently.
Okay.
Next show up is Stargate Universe.
And hey, could I ask you, I've got Stargate Universe on Blu-ray, the first season, and I've also been trying to catch up with Spartacus. Do you prefer Stargate Universe, or do you want me to stick to Spartacus?
Spartacus is, overall, is a better show.
But we're clearly talking about Stargate Universe, so you must have some value in it.
But Spartacus is not on, which is why we're not talking about it. But I'm saying, that's true. Stargate Universe has some value, but Spartacus is a better show. It's that simple. There's no question if ands or buts. Yeah, one is kind of better. No. Spartacus is a better show.
Well, doesn't Stargate Universe have Robert Carlyle? He's a good actor.
I'm not arguing that point. Your question to me was which show should you watch? I am answering your question. Watch Spartacus.
I agree.
Everyone here is agreeing with me. Greg agreed. David agrees. Watch Spartacus.
Well, what is it you like about SGU?
That's a very general question, but the best thing that they have going on is the conflict between Robert Carlyle's Rush and Young, who is the military leader. Rush is a scientist, but he is driven, ambitious, conniving, liar, coward, sometimes brave. His character is very complex, which makes him very, very interesting. And Young is very complex, which makes him very, very interesting. And watching them butt heads is by far the best thing about this show.
I disagree about that. I like the alien subplot. The plot about, you know, finding out about the ship, finding about the aliens who abducted them, and
That's interesting. I'm not arguing. That's totally interesting. But they don't deal with that.
They don't deal with it as much. Unfortunately.
Yeah, they don't deal with that every week. But right. They do deal with the alien stuff. Is really good. I agree because you want to know. Because now we've been introduced to the ones who have genetically manipulated Chloe, plus there's the ones who captured the dude. I can't think of his name. They captured him. They were in the pods, and he got taken off, but I'm assuming we're going to see him again. But, yeah, there's the alien, and now we have that the ancients found the answer to the universe in the background radiation of the galaxy or whatever, and they're trying to figure that out. So they've got about three or four alien subplots, which are all really pretty good. But character-wise, because, you know, I'm big into character. Character-wise, it's all about Rush and Young for me.
I like Rush's character and what they do with him a lot. Young is not, I don't know, it's not working for me enough. I don't see what's going on in his head, I guess, enough to know what motivates him, what drives him, and why the conflicts to him matter. I mean, the conflict with the Raiders or whatever, and the conflict with Rush, and just the difficulty of command and so forth. I don't really get into his head, and I'm not sure, you know, why. But I can't love the characters as much.
Well, it worked for me. And this week's episode was more about the Lucian Alliance guy kills this woman who was using the stones, which actually ends up killing two women. And so it was Eli's girlfriend and Rush's girlfriend. And generally speaking, I would describe Rush as a coward. However, in this episode, he went way above and beyond because the dude killed his girlfriend. He went kind of nuts. And that was really interesting to see. That even though, generally speaking, I would describe him as a coward, when he's not really thinking about himself and his emotions are totally clouded, he was totally selfish at the end because, like, he walks up to the guy, they're like, we're never going to get him to talk, we're never going to get him to tell us the secrets. when the guy is on the brink of dying, he's like, dude, I have all these secrets. I'll tell you everything, anything you want to know. And Rush is like, nah, I think I want to kill you. And I got the, I get that, but then, of course, now he's got the guilt of all the humans on Earth who are going to get killed because they don't have the intel are now kind of his fault, you know?
Yeah, I get the, I like the, I agree about Rush's, the complexity of Rush's character, although I think I'm a week behind then. The episode I just watched was the Eli and his mother. Was that last week?
Oh, that's like 3 weeks ago.
Oops.
Yeah, you're a couple weeks behind.
And where Chloe was writing formulas on the script.
Well, she's still doing that, but yeah, you're behind. Greg, what do you think, real quick?
Olivia, do you really think that Rush is going to feel guilty that they didn't get, or they didn't have an opportunity to get intel?
He'll feel guilty for about 5 minutes, and then his non-conscious...
Okay, that sounds about right.
Yeah, because he looks guilty. Like, once they were like, oh, did he tell you anything? And he was like, no. Or, no, they were like, oh, too bad we can't get the information from him. And he had this moment where he looked guilty for a second, and he'll be over it. I mean, because he justifies everything in his mind that no matter what he does, he can't be wrong. You know, like, he always justifies everything. So, right. Yeah, I think he'll feel guilty until he runs through this bizarre justification in his head, and then it'll be all good.
Morally ambiguous.
Yes, and that makes his character interesting, but not necessarily a good guy. And that's an interesting thing of making this kind of guy your main character. That makes that interesting. Peter, there you go. It's an interesting character story. They got aliens, they got spaceships, but the actual story of Spartacus is a better story.
I'm just curious because I'm more of a science fiction person, but yeah, I'm just curious. So
I'm much more sci-fi, but the Spartacus is also much more watchable for me.
Yeah, Spartacus is fantastic.
The noir look of SGU and what the pacing is just, it drags me down sometimes and I can't really, you know, it's sometimes one of the shows that I could easily fall asleep to if I wasn't.
Yeah, the production value on Spartacus is better.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, and for me, Stargate Universe, like midway through first season, kind of lost me. And so it's really just picked me back up, but I don't really have a good reason for that other than it's the only sci-fi thing in space on television right now that I know of.
Right. All right, we got to move on. The next show we want to talk about is NCIS. I want to talk about it real quick. David, you watched it, right?
Yeah.
All right, so I haven't talked about NCIS in a couple weeks, but this one I felt like I had to talk about whether I talked about it by myself or not. It was fantastic. It was a two-parter, and it was the first part was called Enemies Foreign. And then when I looked up the second
episode,
and then when I looked on the second one, it was like Enemies Domestic. I was like, no, the second part should be and domestic.
I agree.
And anyway, I was kind of irritated by that. But the main plot, it seems like this season or the last season or two, the motive is to make all the characters who've had issues with their fathers, everyone has to make up with their father, apparently. And I'm actually, like, I thought that the Gibbs making up with his dad really worked. I thought that DeNozzo making up his dad felt a little cheap. But this week's episode... I kind of don't think she should make up with her dad because, I mean, seriously, he left her to die in a desert. And the only reason that she's not dead is because Gibbs went against orders and went and rescued her. Hmm. You know, and her father wasn't willing to do that. So Gibbs has always been the father figure for everyone in his team, and he would do anything for every single one of them. And he's also been a better substitute dad for everybody else because DeNozzo grew up without really a father figure, and Gibbs is that for him. And Ziva's father raised her to be an assassin and didn't really have any interest in her welfare or emotional being, as far as I could tell. Now all of a sudden they're trying to make him a little warm and fuzzy. But
McGee and Abby? Do they have
Abby's
fathers?
Father is dead.
Oh, okay.
So Gibbs is her father as well.
Right.
We don't know about McGee's father. We've never been introduced. We've only met his sister. Right. So I don't know about McGee's thing. McGee really is more like DeNozzo and Ziva are his siblings, more than Gibbs is really a father figure for him. But Gibbs is definitely substitute dad for everybody else who really needs one.
Right.
And he also always gets mad. And like when he meets their real father, he always has issues. Like, Robert Wagner showed up, and him and Gibbs almost came to fisticuffs, and him and David almost come to fisticuffs, too, because Eli David feels like Gibbs stole his daughter away from him. And Gibbs is like, we'll take her back then. Let's see you do that. You know, so they very much have testosterone contests over who is the better father. And that's always really interesting to me. But this week's episode, of course, Ziva has to be on protection detail for her dad, even though she's not speaking to him because, you know, he abandoned her to die. I still think that that was all interesting. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, nothing else comes to mind. Robert Wagner, it's nice to see him on TV, but, you know, and to get some backstory on the on Tony's character. And it's interesting, like you said, the interesting conflict between Gibbs and him, you know, plays out more of the father figure drama that Gibbs is everyone's father, so.
Well, of course, the cliffhanger is... her father is now in danger. His protection detail has been killed. I really don't think they're going to kill him.
No, I don't think so either.
Mainly because you still haven't resolved the emotional conflict with Ziva. Although if they do kill him, then Gibbs is officially her dad, and right. Then she has to grieve, but I don't know.
I think there's more story that they can write about the conflict between Eli and
Ziva.
Ziva, yeah. So I don't think it's worth their while to kill him off yet.
Well, I just don't want them to make up by the end of the episode. You know, I really don't want them to be, oh, I thought you were dead, I love you, Dad. Like, I really don't want that.
I think it's a fine line to cross, or to juggle between having enough, you know, resolving it enough so that you're not waiting for it in the next episode, because he's not going to come back, and I'm sure he's not going to come back real soon. He'll be
right
back maybe later. And you don't want to be too... Pollyanna too, you know, everything's great now, and they're all made up, and everything's hunky-dory, so.
That's true. Alright. Okay, moving on. NCS was good this week, loved it, can't wait for next week. Moving on to Modern Family. I know you have an opinion, Peter, go.
That might be the best one of the season, man. I thought it was, I'm a big fan of the show, but it's pretty awesome. Like, just, I mean, basically, having Manny have this crisis of, like, have I really had a childhood? Did they ever say, is it his 16th birthday?
No, they said he was born a 16-year-old. He's not 16.
Born a 16-year-old, so what is he, maybe 12?
I was like, he's maybe 11 or 12 tops. I was like, 16, are you kidding me?
But yeah, no, I thought that was great. And then, like, the Phil and Claire?
Yeah.
Phil and Claire are racing to the restaurant, and like the boy, their little boy, thought that when the dad said, all right, your mom and I are splitting up, he thinks that you know, they're separating. And then, of course, he was like, I'm going with you, Dad. So then when the mom finds out later, she like stops the car, is like, so what did you mean when you like it? That was good. Like, I liked when the whole thing about, like, there's some camp they go to.
Oh,
and, like,
yeah, family camp.
If it's white, it's right. There's something like that. It's some.
Oh,
something.
Yeah, it was family camp, and he was always on Team White. And right. Team White had a shirt that said, if it ain't white, it ain't right. And he's wearing the shirt home, and the taxi cab driver, who's a black guy, throws their luggage down and just, like, is completely angry with them. Because that's in a flashback. Because he says the line again, and his wife is like, dude, did you not learn from the last time you said that phrase? And he's like, what? And then they do the flashback and show it, which is all pretty good. Because he obviously, the thing that's cool about it is he doesn't get it. Like, he doesn't get that it's racist, because he thinks of it as that's just their team and their team logo. So he's not making the connection. So that's
right.
That's the only reason why I think that's funny. But I think this episode, I agree, is one of the strongest ones they've had. But from my perspective, it was because of Jay and... What is her name?
Yeah, the wife.
I had it a second ago. Anyway, she cracks me up. Because half the time she's speaking in English, which you have a hard time understanding. The other half of the time she's speaking in Spanish, which I personally don't understand. But I understand her enough to get that she is fantastic. I love the bit where Manny's doing his crisis and he's in the pool... and she like pulls out the BB gun and shoots it, and he's like, you could have killed me. She's like, please, I could have taken the buttons off your shirt if I wanted to.
Right. Which, of course, because Jay's always making fun of her from being from Colombia, and then this proves that he's somewhat right. The stereotype is somewhat true. Yes. He's against the gun.
Well, what's also great about it is he's like he's talking about the fact that she's not organized. He was like, if you're from Colombia, shouldn't you be more organized? You know how to dodge the death squads and whatnot? And she's just like, it's just my keys. He's like, yes, you should probably put them on a key ring. And then, of course, he finds the keys in his own pocket. And she's been looking for the keys for, like, hours. So instead of just admitting, oh, oops, I put the keys in my pocket, he then tries to hide them in her purse and make her think that she overlooked them.
Oh, and her name is Gloria.
Thank you, Gloria. And this is the whole thing where she's like, oh, you can tell me if you did it. It's okay. I won't get mad.
Right.
And then he finally is like, all right, I did it. And she beats the crap out of him with her purse or her gun or something. It's great. And she shot the ice thing out of his. He had like a, what are those ice things called where you hold ice? The ice, not an ice tray, but it's an ice bucket. He was trying to hide her keys in the ice bucket at the end, and she, like, shot it out of his hands and told him to move away slowly. She's fantastic. And she threatens him and her son in such a way that they're terrified of her. But in a comedy sort of way, of course.
You know, I just thought of this. I think the reason I think Modern Family is the best comedy on television right now is it's kind of interesting because Libby and I often argue about, I'm more of a comedy sitcom person, and Libby is more of a drama sitcom, one-hour format person. And there are a lot of comedies I like that, like The Office or, you know, Arrested Development, that Libby just isn't into. And Libby, I usually, you tend to like, you like Big Bang Theory and you like 30 Rock, shows that I think are, that go for big laughs, you know, which I like, nothing wrong with big laughs. I feel like
if you're watching a comedy, it's supposed to make you laugh. If it doesn't make you laugh, then it's not a drama.
You're supposed to cry at every episode. It's like, well, you don't always have to cry. Not every drama has to be sad all the time.
Or scary.
You know?
Yeah, I understand. But comedy, the definition means you're supposed to laugh.
Well,
that's pretty standard.
Whatever it is you want to call it, whatever this half-hour format is, there are a lot of shows that I really react to. And sometimes it's because of the characters. The reason I like the BBC Office and the Steve Carell Office is not really because of the big laugh. It's more that I find the character interactions very compelling and interesting. But what I was going
to
say...
Yes, let's move back to Modern Family. Back to Modern Family. You're almost out of time.
Yeah, yeah. What I was going to say was, I think Modern Family is probably the best one because it kind of combines what I really like and what you really like. Modern Family does have a lot of really big, funny laughs, but I do think the character dynamics are there, and I do care about the characters. I don't really care about the characters on 30 Rock. I think 30 Rock is very funny. I don't really care. I don't really care about the characters. I do care about the characters on Arrested Development, but then you don't really think it's that funny. I think Modern Family somehow does both. I do think the character dynamics are interesting, and they're people I care about, and I do think it's laugh out loud funny. I think it's both. I think that's, to me, why it's the best comedy on television.
I think it's interesting that you say that, because that's something I hadn't thought of before. I don't watch Modern Family on a regular basis because I've watched the first few episodes of the season and I thought, it's okay. It's not really laugh out loud funny. It's like, oh yeah, that's kind of a funny joke, but it's very predictable to me. But there are characters behind them, and that's something that's interesting for me. When I watch a drama, I care about the characters. I care about House. I care about Sherlock. I care about, you know, the people in the stories, mm-hmm. in dramatic. But
right.
in the sitcoms, I care about funny lines. I care about witty things. I care about surprises. I watch Community. I watch Cougar Town because it's Bill Lawrence. And I watch 30 Rock. And I like those shows a lot because they're very funny. They have a lot of witty writing. But I don't watch Modern Family because I don't think the writing is that clever. I think it's more about the characters. I don't think the jokes are that funny.
Did you watch season one?
I watched the first few episodes of the season, yeah.
Of this season?
Really?
I think, two.
Of Modern Family season one, the first.
So you watched it for last year?
I watched the few seasons, a few episodes of the beginning of season one, and then I watched the second half of this episode, so I knew some of what you're talking about. I remember, I like Sofia Vergara in anything that she does, pretty much, just because she's on the screen, but she was very funny with the gun. That was very funny. I liked that. But for the most part, I think it's... Maybe the comedy's being invested in the characters, which is not why I watch the sitcoms generally. So So that's a different right. For me.
I can see that. And I like, it's funny you say that, because I actually like Community too. But I would actually put Community more in the I think it's witty and interesting, but I don't really think it's laugh out loud funny that much. But I do like it. And I think, Libya, you are kind of on it.
I've only seen two episodes, and I wasn't that impressed.
I think Abed is the new George from Seinfeld, you know, the...
Yeah, I didn't like Seinfeld.
Yeah, well, I didn't like Seinfeld that much either.
No, there you go.
I didn't like Seinfeld that much either.
I really love Modern Family. I love the characters, and I think it's very funny.
All right, and that's about it for Modern Family. We'll talk about it again next week. Since we're talking comedies... The next show that we're going to talk about is Big Bang. All right, apply your theory to Big Bang, Peter.
No pun intended.
Well, yeah, you see, to me, Big Bang is a traditional sitcom comedy, you know? Like, we love when, you know, just like how Bart Simpson would say, like, don't have a cow, man, or whatever, or Homer would say, dough. When I watch Big Bang, you know, we're waiting for Bazinga, or, like, for him to go, that weird, I don't know if you caught that, but that weird little, you know, when he...
He does his little laugh.
He does this weird little... like thing, but to me, and I really like Big Bang Theory, it's a funny show, but like, do I think the character dynamics are anywhere near as layered as a Modern Family or Community? Not really. And I do like, I like Sheldon, he's great and everything, he's a really original, although, you know what, I take that back, I'm not really sure if I think Sheldon's really that original as much as I think Sheldon and Leonard are basically Frasier, but the show's been transformed into a geek culture. And like, follow me. Frasier was all about this kind of uptight, snotty guy who is or isn't social because of the world he lives in. But when compared to his brother, Niles is way more extreme. Niles is way more like, you know, OCD and snotty and all those kind of things. And on Big Bang Theory, that's kind of the dynamic. The dynamic is that, like, Leonard is a nerd, and he doesn't necessarily get all the girls. But if you compare him to Sheldon, it's way more extreme.
Well,
I think that character dynamic is kind of similar. Now, that isn't wrong. I think Frasier's great, and I really like Big Bang Theory. But I'm not really watching those shows. You know, you had just mentioned Community. I mean, Community, I think, is very clever. There's a lot of interesting kind of... Just the way they play with the television format, I think, is interesting. And by definition, Big Bang, because it is a traditional sitcom, you know, it's like a three-camera show. They just can't really do that. I mean, like, that's just the kind of show it is. And I've never been a fan. I don't know if I really like Chuck Lorre, because you said he did Dharma and Greg, you know, it was okay. And then doesn't he do Two and a Half Men?
Yeah, which is awful.
I don't really like that. But I do like Big Bang Theory. And Penny was sorely missed, and I'm glad she's back, and this was a good episode that we're about to get into. But do I think the show's like a Modern Family or Community? Nah, not really. Like, I like it, though. You know, very funny.
I think that it's interesting you mentioned Frasier, because they're another set of geeks in a different way.
Yes. So, yes, exactly.
I think that was his point.
Yeah.
But I see your connection, except that on this show, was the brother Niles, did he become bigger than Frasier? Because in this show, everyone loves Sheldon and nobody really cares about Leonard anymore.
Really?
True. I would say Frasier was a little better balanced, but Niles was really, David Hyde Pierce, I mean, he really became, I mean, he a household name because of that show.
Well, I'm just saying that I think if you look at season one, the show was supposed to be about Leonard. And then Sheldon was the goofy sidekick best friend.
Right, they did shift.
And it's now, the show is really about Leonard. No, the show is really about Sheldon, and Leonard is kind of the sidekick now.
Huh. Is this a Captain Spock sort of thing?
Is this a what?
Is this a Captain Kirk Spock sort of thing that Spock becomes more popular than Kirk?
Well, except that in this case, in Star Trek, even though that became true, the stories were still about Kirk, even though Spock became more popular. On Big Bang Theory, as Sheldon has become more popular, the stories are now about Sheldon. And like,
although this episode, he's barely in it.
Yeah,
this is one of the few episodes that was more about Leonard.
That's funny, because I haven't watched the show. I watched it, I think, the first season, and I hadn't watched it for a while because I thought it was just okay. And then I watched it in preparation for this podcast, and I thought it was just still about Leonard. And I was like,
no.
Maybe it was just me, but...
it's just this particular episode...
This particular one was a little different. Yeah. Normally, Libby, I would say, is right. This particular episode is a deviation from that, but normally, yes.
Okay.
And talking about the episode real quick, you have like a minute.
Well, I thought it was funny. I mean, I love, you know, I like Penny with it's just so funny because I just started watching Deadwood, and is Penny's dad is a Carradine? And I'm sorry, but
he is Keith. Keith
and there, he's Keith or David? Which is he?
He is Keith. David is dead.
David was Kung Fu.
Yes, he is dead.
Okay, so he's Keith Carradine, and he's in Deadwood, and which I just started watching, and he's now playing Penny's dad. He's great. Like see, actually, to me, like that's a very sitcom situation. You know, like I told my dad that we're still dating, and for 22 minutes, you're gonna have to pretend that it's like that's such a sitcom. You know, but I totally liked it. I liked going along with it, but like to me, that is such it's so overblown. You know.
Right, and of course it blows up with them at the end.
But of course, right. Although it didn't blow up exactly the way I thought, because a traditional sitcom like a Three's Company, it would blow up in a way that spirals out of control. You know, like Jack Tripper doesn't want someone to know something, and then they somehow find out. In this one, it sounds like Penny eventually tells her dad.
Yeah,
remember it's a phone conversation. Right. So that actually is a little different.
And it was just sort of off screen because
It is kind of off screen. You're right.
Yeah, so it's kind of weird. But Greg, you had a comment?
I was just going to say that I really enjoyed the episode, especially when Leonard got to play that he was still back with Penny. I don't know if they ever really resolved, and I don't know if this was an attempt to try to resolve how they broke up, because basically they just broke up because of Wesley Crusher.
Yes, basically.
So... I thought I actually generally, as I was watching the episode, generally felt Leonard's joy like every single time.
But it felt a little weird because she obviously didn't want to kiss him, and he was like sticking his tongue down her throat. I was like, that is so gross.
That's what made it so great.
That was from a girl's perspective.
I think that is what made it great and gross.
Yes, I was just like, ew. Because, I mean, they broke up because of Wesley Crusher, but he basically pointed out a truth about their relationship, which was that Leonard was in love with Penny, but she wasn't in love with him. She was, or she was afraid of the whole love word, and that's really what they broke up about. He just facilitated it.
Oh, but they revealed that in last week's episode in the slumber party, though.
Well, no. In the episode that they broke up, that's where they revealed it. But the slumber party revisited it, basically, because it made Penny think about, you know, she really liked Leonard. He was the best boyfriend she's ever really had, yet she let him go. And so she obviously still has some feelings about that. So I think I'm afraid we might be going back to a reconciliation. I don't know. I'm not sure if I want one.
Because I want Leonard. I want him to get a different kind of girlfriend and then see how Penny reacts. I like that kind of stuff. I always think that's kind of fun.
Yeah, that's true too. I don't know if I really want Penny and Leonard back together.
What happened to the, what's her name from the Roseanne Barr show?
You mean Blossom?
Yeah, the other one.
No, I know who you're talking, Melissa Gilbert.
Yes, Melissa Gilbert.
Oh, she's in and out.
Okay. Yeah, she's in and out. I mean, we haven't seen her in a while.
He slept with her somewhat recently, like maybe last season, but...
So it's an on-again, off-again thing?
Yeah, because she basically only wants him for sex. She has no other interest in him whatsoever. Hmm. And she's made that very clear and very coldly. Blossom is now Sheldon's not-girlfriend. And that's actually way more entertaining because they're literally identical. It's just one is female and one is male. Hmm. They are the same character, and it's really funny to watch them have a conversation. Hmm. All right, next show we want to talk about is Fringe. Don't all talk at once.
Good episode, but speaking that this was their classic, because next week is Thanksgiving, so we're not going to see it for 2 weeks, I was like, really, that's your bit? Because, I mean, basically, if you've been watching Fringe, every other episode of Fringe is in the alternate universe. If it's a blue credit, it's our world. If it's a red credit, it's the alternate universe. And this episode, what was this episode called? Oh, it's called Abducted.
Yeah.
So it's all about so the main plot is about children who get abducted. But
By the Candyman.
Wait, what? By the Candyman. Right, but the key thing, this is what I liked, was that Broyles' son was one of the kids who was abducted years ago. And of course, he knows that the Olivia he deals with is actually from our world. And, you know, halfway through, I was like, clearly what's going to happen is that, you know, Olivia is really going to end up helping Broyles and his and the family. So he's going to somehow realize that she needs to get back. So then, of course, she makes the mistake. She says something to the kid about the FBI. And in their world, the FBI, it was, didn't he say it was like, it was defunct 10 years ago or something like that?
It was disbanded, yeah.
Disbanded. So basically he knows she's going to try to escape and he's basically going to step aside. But, which I was all cool with. You know what I don't understand? She goes in that sensory deprivation camp. She ends up back in the other, our world of the Statue of Liberty. Okay, totally cool. She's all wet and everything. I think she disappears in the alternate world, but then somehow they were able to grab her back.
Right. How do they bring her back? I don't understand how they do that.
Like, that's where I was like, wait, how did they? So I was a little disappointed. However, I did like that she basically talks to, looks like a janitor that's there, and she's like, I need to tell you something. And then, she, you know, she ends up being captured. And then, of course, Peter gets the call, and he's sleeping with the faux Olivia. And she's like, you know, the real Olivia's on the other side. But it's just like, I wish that was the halfway point, because I was like, really? Now we got to wait for the 2 weeks? And, you know, I was hoping this was going to get Olivia back and everything. So that was a good episode, but I was a little like, oh, this is such a tease, you know?
Yeah, I wonder what the rules are for that thing, because Olivia supposedly is able to shift between the worlds on her own, quote unquote. So I don't know what the tank does for her, if it
helps
allows
her
to do it. But
yeah.
But then what are the rules if they can bring her back? I don't understand that. How she's not strong enough to stay there, or
the only time we've seen her do it on her own, she actually has never really done it on her own. What she did to get there in the first place is there was a bunch of them who had been...
They focused her energy,
and that's how she did it. The tank basically does the same thing. I don't understand how they pulled her back either.
Right.
That's going to be the missing piece that allows her to stay over.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. You know what? Yeah, I just realized. I think it's going to be the opposite. I think what it is that they've captured Olivia, and in the next episode, she's going to do it without the tank. She's going to do it from the prison zone. Because technically, she can do it. She just hasn't been maybe ready to do it on her own.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah. So
maybe it's that. Maybe then she just disappears, and then the Walternate realizes she's gone, you know.
Because she's got to get back. I mean, that's the ultimate outcome of the plot, or, you know, story that's going to have to unfold, is she gets back so that the two Olivias can duel in the real world instead of the Alternate.
Right.
Yeah, and but now that Peter knows that, I almost think that Peter is going to have some hand in that missing piece that's going to allow her to stay over in the other universe, because he's actually from that universe, and he was part of the original group that went over, because it seems like they've shown us several times that she can move over, but something keeps yanking her back, so there's got to be some missing piece that they're going to introduce.
I have a question for you, Greg. Do you think that faux Olivia has any feelings for Peter, because we see in the preview that she figures out that he figures it out.
She's got a gun pointed at him.
So what do you think? You think she's, does she actually, all this sleeping with him, do you think she actually feels anything for
him? You know, I can't say at this point, because she has been on mission the entire time. So
I think she's gonna seem cold, and then near the end of the season, she's gonna do something that, like, makes us realize that she was on mission, but she kind of did care about Peter. And I'm predicting it. I predict that the faux Olivia dies this season, and that the next season, assuming the show doesn't get canceled, the next season is one Olivia and one Peter, and they're both unique.
Well, you've been hyping the whole unique thing forever.
I'm very big on the unique.
Oh,
well, because in worlds of alternate universes, that's what stands out in those stories. I mean, that's the cool part about the alternate universe is what isn't, you know, identical.
Yeah, but if you kill the Olivia, that doesn't make her necessarily, this one, necessarily unique. It's just, oh, I killed my alternate. It's not
quite
the same.
Well, but it means that you can get rid of that plot device of, like, is this the real Olivia? Plus, all, I mean, because I think they've done it so much this season. And plus, we already know that our Olivia is unique, because she's the only one who can go between worlds.
That's true, but they found out it's a chemical compound, which I'm assuming they're going to try to replicate.
Yes,
that's true. And then you're going to have a bunch of people jumping from universe to universe.
I really feel like this could be a good solid. I mean, I think this season's been really good. I feel like it needs one more. I hope it doesn't get canceled, because to me it feels like if you do one more season, that could pretty much be a complete show. Like, I don't know if this needs to be a 5-season show, but it feels to me like The War that would be the last season. So I feel like it needs one more season.
Right. I can agree with that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, moving on to Burn Notice. We didn't talk about it last week because I didn't have anybody on the cast who wanted to talk about Burn Notice. And actually, I was behind and I hadn't watched it either. I am guilty. This is the other confusing thing the USA is doing, which is they're bringing shows back and away and back and away. And I complained about it incessantly last week, so I'll spare you this week. This episode of Burn Notice is basically dealing with Jesse, dealing with the whole betrayal that he felt from Michael. And I like the whole concept of saying that they're a family. I like that they bullied them into having their little meeting. And because if you got two people in the field in a very dangerous situation and they don't trust each other, yes, that's a very easy way for everyone to get killed. So,
and I like that it was his mom.
I like, because they were totally intimidated. It was awesome. The mom was like, sit down. And he was, because he was all, Jesse was like, I don't have time for this, I have to go. And she just snaps at him and tells him to sit down. He sits down, and she just yells at them for a minute. And she's like, I don't care if you don't like it, I don't care if you're not, but shake on it, whether you agree on it or not. And they just kind of reach over, they're terrified. The mom is awesome, because she uses her mom powers, obviously on Michael, very easily. But because Jesse lived with her for so long at the beginning of the season, he very much feels like she's his mom. So she used her mom power on him as well. I thought that was great. What do you think of the episode, though, as far as the plot?
Yeah, I generally like the Richard Kind episodes. I like when he's in there, Marv the Handler. I want to see how that pays off. I liked the little interaction with Jesse and Marv, where he kind of convinced him, you know, you got to be a good guy because this is going to be a good thing. And you know what you did? That helped so many people. And he's like, okay, well, I'll do that then. I'll help you again. Because he was on the fence and, you know, he's reluctant because of being associated with this burned agent or whatever. But,
well, I mean, yeah, because the thing is, if you get associated with a burned agent, then you could get burned. Right. So you understand his reluctance. That's not even a question.
Right. And as far as the other plot, I like, it's funny because we're not talking about it, but Human Target had a thief who also stole something and tricked the main characters into doing something for her benefit as well. And
oh, that's right.
So it's a similar theme, yeah. Similar plot, and I liked that too.
Oh, we didn't talk about Human Target this week, but that's okay. We'll probably talk about it next week because it was a good premiere. Just as an aside, it was a very good premiere, introduction of new characters.
Yes, it was. Side note, yes, it was. Good episode.
Yeah, I look forward to more Human Target too. So
yeah, I actually think this season is going to be really good. Which last season was okay, but I really am a little more excited about this season.
Guerrero rocks. I think he's great.
She's like, you're Guerrero? She's like, I'll talk. I know we've gone off topic, but I actually have to say this. There was a scene where they call Guerrero and they're like, we need you for the mission. Right. And he's like, okay, no problem. I got to rearrange some stuff. And I was like, what? Does he have a body in the trunk or something?
Exactly.
And he totally has a body in the trunk. It was awesome.
And then he just drops the body like off anywhere and it continues driving the car.
Well, the guy wasn't dead yet.
Yeah.
So he was kind of like, this is your lucky day.
That was good.
Yeah, Guerrero's fantastic. And now, my problem with him in the first season was that I didn't know if we could trust him or not. But now that we know that we can trust him, I'm totally on board with Guerrero. He just walks in with a freaking huge rifle and security freaks out. And the guy's like, no, he's with us. Don't worry about it. Oh, man, yeah, he was great. And I like just the byplay between him and Chief McBride. When he's like, oh, I found the thief. I'm going to chase her. He's like, yeah, he's like, I'll catch her. He's like, yeah, if she stops for donuts or something, he'll catch her. All that was just really good. Oh, and when he catches the girl, she's like, there's a guy chasing after me.
Right.
And he's like, oh, what is he? Her. Yeah, he's like, what does she look like? She starts to explain. He's like, clocks her right in the jaw. That was great. Oh my god, yeah. We totally sidetracked on Human Target. I'm sorry, but it was good. And I didn't know that all you guys watched it either. I was unaware that everybody else was watching it. Any other comments on Human Target real quick before we go back to Burn Notice?
Different opening theme. Yeah.
And a girl from Torchwood is on it too.
Yeah, yeah.
She's the new benefactor, the woman that they save at the beginning. She was Susie Costello from season one of Torchwood.
Always killing Susie.
They keep killing Susie. Yeah. You don't remember that? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So I was. That's how I know her. She will always be Susie to me. But she's a really good addition. She adds a little class.
It almost makes it a little predictable or formulaic or whatever to have the benefactor. But you know, they needed nicer offices, I guess. I don't know.
I don't care about the nice
set. They needed a new set.
They needed a new set. I get that they did that, but also because she is a worldwide organization, they now can have cases that are international. Because before it was sort of like
they were international, weren't they?
A little bit, but I feel like they can have bigger profile cases now.
Well, I think maybe in terms of the budget of the show, if they got picked up, now they can spend more money on airplanes and helicopters and, you know, foreign locations and stuff like that.
That's true.
Which makes sense, and that's fine. I don't mind that. It seems a little contrived, but, you know, whatever.
I don't mind. And for some reason, Christopher Chance, for some reason this season, looks better. I don't know what it is. All of a sudden, I'm like, he's a really good-looking guy. Like, I didn't notice it that much last season, but for some reason this season, all of a sudden, I'm noticing.
I noticed the difference in the opening theme. As you know, Bear McCreary wrote the music last year, but for some reason, the opening theme it wasn't his usual style. So I'm wondering if he's still doing the music for the show.
He's still in the credits, I think.
I didn't look. I have no idea. Well, check that out for us, Greg. Let us know.
All right.
All right. Well, going back to Burn Notice, because we got sidetracked.
Yeah.
But in a good way.
Yeah.
The
interaction, interplay between the female thief and Fiona was good when she jumped out and saved Fiona from being discovered.
With the baby stroller, they had the fight in the street, and then both of the guys did the head tilt.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, that's predictable, but still funny.
Yeah.
I knew that she was going to betray them. Like, first of all, she starts off the intro by murdering a guy in cold blood. So that's her intro. So the fact that she's lying is not that surprising. However, I liked how they switched it back on her. Like, they figured out where the listening device was. And then had a little script going, and they knew, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I thought, how could she be so clever and yet not think that they are going to find the listening device after she tricks them? And how else would they know that she's found out what they're doing? Except
that's a very good point. That's a very good point. But they also sort of addressed that because they said that the conversation was vague enough that she had to figure it out. Versus giving her exactly the information that she needed.
If she'd known that they were actually listening, she would have ignored everything they were saying, you know, or taken.
Except that their point was she couldn't take the risk that she had a fake because then she'd get killed.
Yeah, I guess so. But I don't know. It's still hard to believe. But you know, there's always a grain of something that's hard to swallow in these things. It's you know, you have to suspend your disbelief enough to go along, otherwise you can't enjoy the ride. So.
Right, and I like the fact that he shot the fake chemicals and basically tear gassed everyone.
Right.
I thought that was pretty good. So, I mean, I like the episode. I thought it was a good it was a good second episode, and Michael's not 100% fit yet because he's been shot. So, but they still managed to make this episode exciting. The only thing I still find a little weird is that when Jesse is doing an operation and he's being all spy-like, they have Michael do the voiceover when Jesse is working, which he's never done for anybody else. He only does it for himself. Like, if Fiona or Sam are doing something, he's not doing the voiceover. Does
somebody else do the voiceover?
No, there's no voiceover when they do stuff. There's only.
I guess they needed it at that point, and who else are they going to have to do the voiceover?
Well, but they've been doing it all season. This isn't a new thing. Whenever Jesse is doing something that normally Michael would do,
right,
then they have Michael do the voiceover for Jesse, which I still think is bizarre because the whole premise of the show is the voiceover is kind of like what Michael is thinking at that moment and how he's making the decisions to do what he's doing, so it makes sense. So it's sort of weird that he's doing the voiceover for Jesse's actions.
I sort of think that the voiceover is like as if Michael were, you know, watching the reel of his own life, you know, unfold and explaining what had happened to him, you know. So if he's explaining,
you're saying that's
just
how that
narrating
works.
The whole show. Yeah, I mean, it's just a narration. I think it still works okay.
I don't know. I still think it's a little weird.
Yeah, The one thing I love about Burn Notice, or one of the things I love about Burn Notice, is that in addition to the, you know, fabulous explosions and car chases and things like that, is the thing that Matt Nix does about explaining spy techniques and whatever.
Yeah.
And Michael, sometimes in the show, and then there's also a webisodic or whatever, a behind the scenes thing where he does,
I,
you know,
love
Ask a Spy.
The,
or
Ask
like
a Spy
that.
Is fantastic. I love it.
It's really cool to hear, you know, how to make these explosives or how to get into a locked building or
well,
how to,
actually,
you know.
Actually, what I think are better when Ask a Spy is he tells you how to get a promotion.
Yeah, that was like, that was,
yeah, good. Like those are just bizarre
how
things
to deal with people that, yeah, spies have to be good with and charismatic and whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he tells you how to do all that stuff.
That's very cool.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. Moving on to the last show we're going to talk about, which is Supernatural. And this week's episode, what, last week was All Dogs Go to Heaven. What was this week?
Fairies.
It was Fairies, but I was trying to remember the title, which I can't apparently off the top of my head. But it was a very good episode because they do the, what's strange is Castle did the UFO thing and then Supernatural did the UFO thing to the point that we actually had the X-Files credits. Like they redid the credits per X-Files. Which was bizarre, but kind of cool.
I love it when The Simpsons does that. They do parodies of other shows really well with, you know, credits and voiceovers and styles that the other shows use.
Well, and this is, they've done that on a small scale, but this is the first time that they've done that fully. And that's mainly because they actually have some of the X-Files people working on the show. Yeah. So that was all pretty good. I enjoyed that. And I like the whole misdirection, again, where you think it's aliens, but it's actually fairies. And I have to say, the two best conversations were when Sam gets kidnapped. Not Sam. Dean gets kidnapped. Sam immediately ends up sleeping with some random woman. And Dean is trying to explain him why that's not cool. Like, that was really funny. He's like, well, what if I don't have anything to do for the night? Is it? No. You're supposed to be sit in the dark and angst about how you can't find your brother. He's like, but you know, I'm with the girl and it's in the dark. And the last thing I liked was, of course, the kind of the finale when they defeat the fairy. And, you know, the woman with the cats gave them all this information and all of it sounds crazy. But once you realize that, you know, it's not all crazy, he ends up defeating the guy by throwing grains of salt on the ground. Fantastic. Oh, Greg, hit me. What'd you think?
I thought the episode was absolutely side-splitting. I think I laughed all the way through. Once again, Jensen Ackles, I mean, just his facial expressions had me just doubled over laughing. Like when he's seeing the fairies and he's actually on the phone and he's in public and he's like, it's the fairies, and then he's trying not to look like he's being discriminatory or anything, and his eyes are kind of darting back and forth. It was just,
oh, when he attacks the guy and he calls him, you fairy, you fairy, yeah. And they're like, do you not like gay people or you not like short people? He goes, he has no real explanation. He's like, it's neither. So that was all pretty funny. And of course, they conveniently forget about the fact that his fingerprints are in the system and he's, you know, a well-wanted criminal. But that's beside the point.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess the only thing I really don't understand is, can you really microwave a fairy and cause it to explode?
Any living being or thing that you put in a microwave will explode.
Yeah, but... Okay, so they were actually there. It's just that most people can't see them.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they said that only people who have gone to the fairy world can then see fairies in this world. So that's why Dean could see them, but Sam couldn't. So it was, I mean, I thought it was pretty good. It was a tease that they had Misha Collins in the opening title with the X-Files thing, and then he wasn't in the episode. I was like, boo. Because I'm hoping. Oh, and then, of course, they did the thing where you realize that now Sam doesn't want his soul back, but now he's back to lying again. And I'm like, oh my God, come on. I really want them to resolve the soul thing by mid-season, mainly because I want to know about the war going on in heaven. Let's go with that, please. Let, you know.
Well, no, I kind of like, I mean, if they were, you know, we were kind of, I was kind of iffy about having another season of Supernatural anyway. And I figured if they were going to have another season, there was going to have to be some sort of, there's always a dynamic between Sam and Dean. And they've pretty much run the entire gamut up to the apocalypse to this point. So how are they going to find this new dynamic? And I think that Sam not having a soul and becoming more like how Dean was, and then Dean kind of becoming more like how Sam was, I think is working for me.
Yeah, I'm really not liking Sam, though. Like, I don't even understand.
It's hilarious. He says whatever comes to his mind.
Yeah, but it's just, I don't like, if I was Dean, I keep putting myself in Dean's position because he's the only one I can empathize with at the moment. I wouldn't travel with him. I really wouldn't. I would not hang out with this guy. I'd figure out how to get his soul back on my own. He's just, you know, he really doesn't care. He really, really doesn't care.
And I think that's fantastic.
I think that's not the kind of guy you want watching your back, though. You know, I'd like to think that the guy watching my back would care whether I lived or died. That would be nice. All right, so that's all for this week. If you have any feedback, remember you can reach us at tvcampfire@gmail.com. Also, follow us on Twitter @tvcampfire, and we're on Facebook. And I'll talk to you guys next week.
And let us know if you also hate or love Gwyneth Paltrow. I'm
talk to you guys next week.
Bye-bye.